Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Everybody, welcome to episode 8 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. I'm very excited today because Abby's back.
Hi.
Welcome back, Abby.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I feel like it's been forever since we got to talk together.
It has been a while.
So we are recording this at the end of what everyone's referring to Snowmageddon. So here in Dallas, we have had one crazy week of snow and cold weather and frozen busted pipes and people without water, and it's been bonkers. It's been really fun to see people, though, kind of come together.
Absolutely.
And support each other. Texas is a good place.
Yeah, the community has really rallied around each other and supported
good people.
Each other. Definitely.
Good people. So today we thought we would talk a little bit about Section 504. Those numbers, we have people say, is it Section 501 or 503 or whatever, but it's Section 504. We're going to share a little bit about what it is and what you get with it, how to access it. And then for our next episode, we're going to talk a little bit about special education and how 504 and special education are the same and how they're different. So today's focus is just going to be all about 504. So Abby, I am going to let you tell us, what the heck is 504? How do you define it?
Well, 504 is a step below special education services. It is available to any and all individuals that have any type of substantial life impairment that interferes with a life function, such as learning or work or communication or hearing or seeing. So 504 actually comes from the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it's a section that affords everybody an opportunity to equal access to their environment, to school, to work, to learning, etc. And it really is the major part of it is that you have to have an impairment that interferes with a major life function. And we think of learning as a major life function. So if you have an impairment such as dyslexia, ADHD, asthma that's severe enough that makes you have to miss school and miss class and lose some educational opportunities, Tourette syndrome, any type of medical condition, a Down syndrome. If you have medical conditions, if you have any severe impairment that your needs can be met through accommodations, you could be eligible for 504.
But learning is one of like the many life activities, right? We're
That's
talking
right.
about like walking and eating and talking and concentrating, communicating, working, breathing, all those things that like are major life functions, right?
That's right.
So
yes.
Something like you said, asthma, that can impact your learning, but it can also impact your ability to participate in PE.
That's right.
Right?
Absolutely.
Or it might also require you to need more frequent breaks or trips to the nurse. I think it's not just, I think the cool thing about 504 is that it obviously learning is the big one, but it can really impact any major life function.
Right. So even work related, we've seen adults come in with learning disabilities where their learning disabilities actually interfere with their ability to perform at work and to be successful at work. And so they're entitled to receive accommodations under Section 504. So one of the great things about 504 is that it lasts through your lifetime. So it starts when you're young, you know, age 3 or 4, and it can go into adulthood, into the work environment. Whereas when we talk about special education, we'll talk about the limiting age factors and the constraints to those services. And those don't last into adulthood and take you into the work setting. Whereas 504 plans can take you into the work setting and allow you to get accommodations.
So it does also show, or the law also states that in order, you know, by law, they have to provide these accommodations if they're receiving funding from the government. So obviously public schools, most colleges and universities, non-private, and then any government industry, right? But what we have found is that because of these laws, many of the places that don't necessarily receive government funding, like private schools and private colleges and private industries, mm-hmm. they're still going to provide these supports, A, because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And B, because it, if they don't, it A, sets them up for potential lawsuits, but it also limits the pool of
applicants.
Of people that can be there, whether it's a private school or a college. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some really talented people that might just need a little bit of a little bit of support.
Sure.
It's easy to do. So we're finding more and more, and we obviously can speak more to the schools and colleges, but I think we're finding more and more private schools and private colleges.
Mm-hmm.
That are offering these
that
supports.
Are offering it. Absolutely. They want to make it equal opportunity access to all.
To so their education.
Yeah, so they're following these plans as well and implementing these
now,
plans.
Now, there is no law in there that states it has to be a quality program or it has to be really well run.
Right.
So you will find as you go through even school districts and colleges that some have amazing plans and programs and will jump through hoops to help their students or their faculty, whereas others, they do the bare minimum and...
Right. But in order to get 504 accommodations and to have access to a 504 plan, what type of proof do you need to show?
Right. That's a big one. You do have to have proof, right? You just can't walk in and be like, hey, I've got dyslexia, so hook me up with some accommodations. You have to show that. So for 504, you just need proof, whether that's a letter from your doctor, a letter from your neurologist, a letter from... your school, a letter from somebody who's done testing and sees that you have a learning disability. It just has to be from somebody who can validate your condition. Mm-hmm. I hate to say disability because some of those are just, they're just medical conditions.
Right.
So it just has to be validated. But I think the really big piece of this that a lot of people overlook is that just having that disability or condition alone doesn't guarantee you get support, right?
That's
why?
True. Well, you have to also show need. It has to, that part of the law that explains that it has to substantially impact your life or a life function. So substantially impacting you, well, if you're a student that's very successful at school and you're making straight A's and you're not having any social or behavioral difficulties and you're doing fine in all areas, then it's hard to prove that you that your disability or your impairment is substantially impacting you.
Right.
So there's that educational need piece where you have to not only show you have an impairment, you have to be able to show that that impairment is negatively impacting you in that setting that you're in.
And I think that's probably the hardest thing to understand because we have so many families that because their child is making C's or making B's and having to work 150 times harder than everybody else, they just assume then that means that they would qualify. But the school looks at that as, but they're passing.
But they're passing.
It's not about, it's about leveling the playing field to meet the bare minimum requirements, not to make everybody an A, straight A student.
That's right. So they're requiring all students to make at least a passing grade of a C. So that's all they're requiring of all students. So we may have a student that's working their tail off for hours and hours in the evening to maintain those C's and B's. But if they are, then the school can easily say, well, they're doing just fine and they're maintaining and they're passing and they're meeting the standards that we expect from all students.
And I think the hard part about that is that between public schools and colleges, the other place that we see a lot of this is on when we have people applying to get accommodations on things like the MCAT, the LSAT, the GRE, the, you know, licensing, different licensings, the bar exam.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really a way to judge the impact on a substantial, you know, a substantial impact on a life function. So where you might be getting it in one place, you might go somewhere else and they might not feel like, it's very subjective, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They may not feel like that's a big impact, right?
Right.
And I feel like you and I have to spend a lot of time justifying that for certain tests or certain, you know, accommodations for certain exams or certain, even certain colleges, whereas others... they really will just accept it
right.
if you have it. So I think that's really interesting that there's not like a There's not a standard.
There isn't a standard, really. I mean, sometimes we have to document there's a disability and we just list recommended accommodations, and those many schools or state exam boards will easily accept our evaluation and take those accommodation recommendations into consideration. Whereas others, they want justification of why that individual needs each of those accommodations based on their individual testing profile.
And how it's limiting.
And how it's limiting those life activities. Right.
I even think it's interesting. We see even just between schools, even just here, right? Forget across the country, but just even here, how one school will push back and say, but you're passing. And another school will be like, yep, okay, you've got it.
Right.
And it's very frustrating, and it's very hard to explain to parents and adults who are trying to get these supports why one place makes it so hard and another place makes it so easy. And I remember it was like last year sometime we had an adult with ADHD who was trying to get some accommodations in law school. And he got it on the LSAT just fine. But then the law school was pushing back because they didn't feel like it was a substantial enough impact on his life function. And it was just like, really? You know, this poor guy. And it's just super frustrating for someone like that to have to keep fighting for a support that really, I mean, it's probably not going to make that big of a difference, right? We're not talking about he's going to be like valedictorian of his class. It's just going to help him get through
it. And we're not saying modify the curriculum for him and make it an easy A. We're just saying give him a few accommodations such as extra time or a quiet place to take exams and things such as that.
So what are what would you say our top five accommodation recommendations are for 504 people?
I would say oral administration of tests, extra time for tests and exams. Including those standardized assessments, testing in a quiet testing center or individual administration of tests, definitely. I said extra time. What else is the most common?
Copies of lecture notes.
Oh, copies of lecture notes prior to the start of class. Actually, the ability to audio record lectures
for college,
is a very common accommodation as well. And a quiet preferential seating with minimal distractions for those with, you know, attention problems and difficulties with focus. So those are the most common ones.
I think really quick, though, I want to interject about SAT and ACT. I think those are the two that we see the most guidelines for, because like who wouldn't benefit from extra time on one of those tests?
Right.
I mean, I probably wouldn't have because I would have lost my mind from boredom, but the majority of the population would probably do well. Mm. So the testing and the documentation of a disability and our ability to explain how it limits this life function for SAT and ACT is still not even enough. You have to show that you've been getting it in school on a regular basis. I think right now they're saying for at least 4 months.
Okay.
So you just can't like get this testing done and be like, boom, I'm in. I'm taking the SAT next week. I'll turn this in. I'll get my extra time. Nope. You've got to show them that you've been using it
routinely and effectively.
But you don't need to do that when you go to college.
Right.
And you don't even have to do that on the MCAT or the LSAT. It's fascinating to me, the differences. But anyway.
And even starting in elementary school, if all of a sudden you go in and you contact the counselor or the 504 coordinator and you find out your child has recently been diagnosed with ADHD and you want them to get 504 accommodations, all you have to do is prove that there is that impairment, that ADHD condition, and they all of a sudden write up an individual accommodation plan for your child, and there doesn't need to be any proof that they've needed those accommodations or that they've using them. Very rarely are they requiring that.
Right. We have not had too many elementary schools push back.
No. And as far as the evaluations, in fact, most 504 committees are not evaluating your students. They are not. If it is dyslexia, the schools are required to evaluate if it's suspected or if it's requested or initiated by a parent or a teacher. So that in itself requires a thorough evaluation that looks at dyslexia. But all those other conditions, there is no evaluation needed and there is no reevaluation. Mm-hmm. So once you get 504 accommodations in school, you can continue to receive them until you graduate.
Without ever being reevaluated, but you do meet annually to discuss the plan.
That's right.
And so you'll meet every year and say, okay, here's what, you know, Joey's been getting, everyone, and the teachers are there and we're talking about, are these things working? And then if after a year or two of showing up at the meeting and they're all like, well, he's not really using any of them, they will dismiss you. Like, mm-hmm. you don't just get to stay if you're not using it, right? Right. But no, they never, ever second guess your diagnosis.
Your initial.
Which I think is really interesting.
It is interesting.
Because special education is very different.
That's right. That is one big difference between 504 and special education. And really and truly, 504, there is no stigma attached to 504. It is so common, and there are students in every classroom and in all classrooms in elementary, middle school, high school, college classrooms, and you wouldn't even be able to point them out if you walked by that room and looked in the window. You would not be able to point out and
who's getting them.
And so that's what's cool about 504. There is no stigma associated. There's not a negative associated, where a lot of people find that the term special education has this negative connotation associated with it, or, you know, my child, I don't want him to be labeled.
Well, but the difference with 504 too is that it doesn't get, it's not put anywhere. Like, it's not on your transcript. If you do get extra time on the SAT or the LSAT or the MCAT, nobody knows. There's not a little asterisk by your score saying, hey, this kid got, you know, this person got extra time. There's no knowing that.
Right.
Whereas in special education, depending on what you're getting, there is, might be something noted on your transcript. So I think that's really important for people to understand, because sometimes people think, oh, well, if I'm getting this extra, you know, quote unquote help, well, then it's not going to count.
Right.
And that's not true at all. Nobody knows that you're getting this support. No, it never gets noted anywhere. If you transfer schools, your cumulative file gets transferred with you, and that information's in that cumulative file. But mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't go to college with you.
Right.
So where people feel like it is can sometimes be negative. And I've had students that will say, you know, I don't want to be singled out, that I get up and go take my test in another room, or that I'm getting, you know, extra help. And I think that's just more of a I think that's more of a maturity and a self-awareness. Like, mm-hmm. you know what? This is important for my, you know, success in school.
Right.
I'm okay with it. And sometimes it just takes some time for those kids to really, like, wrap their head around
absolutely
what's going on and why they need that support.
And that maturity level comes also with self-advocating for your own needs, being able to say, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm supposed to get oral administration of my test. Can I go to the testing center, or can you read this to me? And so I think as they mature and they become more aware of their own needs and have that intrinsic motivation to want to do well and want to succeed for themselves, then they do start advocating for their own needs more often. And they actually start participating in their annual 504 meetings. You know, as they get older, and they have more of a say-so in their education, and they can say, yes, I like that accommodation, or no, that accommodation is not effective for me, I don't want it. I think those are important pieces of including students in their 504 meetings, so that they can indicate what they want and don't want and what they like.
You know, the other thing too is that once they start to see the success that they can get from accepting that help, right? So I don't want it, but wow, I just made an A on my test when I took it. So now I might be a little bit more motivated to ask for it the next time too. And I think they don't know what they don't know
right
until they experience it. So true. So the things that 504 can't do is it can't change the curriculum. It can't change what is being taught. That student is still responsible for all the same objectives and information. It's just presenting it maybe in a different way, or giving them a little, leveling the playing field in the way of like giving them copies of the notes, or more time for the test. But it's not changing what they need to know.
Right. It's more, it actually seems like it's more modifying the environment for them rather than modifying the curriculum. So it's, you know, giving them accommodations that, like you said, help level the playing field, help get rid of some of those challenges related to their impairment or their disability.
Can the school put somebody in 504 without consent from mom and dad?
No. Parents must always provide consent for 504 services, and they can also revoke that consent at any time. So at any time they feel like, I don't want my student receiving these accommodations anymore, or this extra help, or I just don't want them getting anything, they can revoke that consent and just say, no, I no longer want 504 accommodations. But they have to provide consent written consent, there's a whole host of rights that they're entitled to under their procedural safeguards. They get given a document that lists all of their rights as parents, and one of their rights is that they can't change your child's education plan and put them in 504 without you signing consent to that program. So that is an important part, is that the parents do provide the consent. They can revoke the consent. And a student, if he turns 18, say during his senior year of school, he also gets the rights transfer over to him at age 18, him or her.
And then interestingly, when they go to college, the college disability support people won't speak to mom and dad anymore, right? Because now this is students' issue, right? This is their 18, it's their thing. So it's fascinating how that changes. Parents have struggled with that sometimes.
I'm sure.
Because they're used to kind of driving that boat, and now it's not theirs to drive.
And having to say so. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it also is, again, why it's so important to teach that self-advocacy, because when you go off to college, no one's going to be chasing you down saying, hey, don't forget, you can take your test in the testing center.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be lucky if you're not the one always having to remind your professor. So if you don't have that ability to advocate for yourself, then you're probably just not going to get the support.
Right.
No one cares. Except for you.
Even though the professors do get a copy of your accommodation plan, they have so many students that they oversee and that they instruct. So it is hard for them to keep up, I could imagine, in a college setting. And even in a public school setting, you know, K to 12. That's one thing that is great about the 504 plan, is that once you sign consent and your child starts getting 504 accommodations, they together as a committee of the key stakeholders in your child's education, including you as the parent, are a key stakeholder in your child's education, usually an administrator, usually at least one of your child's teachers. You'll all gather together, and together you'll write an individual accommodation plan. Sometimes you hear it called an IAP, which stands for, again, Individual Accommodation Plan for your student. And then that plan is actually distributed to all teachers that your student sees, so that those teachers all know what accommodations Joey's going to get and that need to be implemented. And they should be implementing it with fidelity all of the time, the way it's written. But should is a big factor in that. I mean, again, teachers, we know, they have a million students, they're overworked, they have a ton of paperwork, and they are human just like us and sometimes forget as well. So again, another reason to teach your child to advocate for their own needs and remind them, hey, these are the accommodations you're entitled to, and you might have to remind your teacher that you need to get them. But that plan does get distributed to all professors, all teachers that the student sees.
But again, teaching that advocacy, because we do have a lot of parents that will say, well, they have a plan, but no one's following it. So yes, as a parent, that you have certain, you know, duties up to a certain age that mm-hmm. you need to make sure the school, the teachers are aware. You don't want to just leave it up to the school to handle it. You want to make sure at the beginning of the year, you're emailing all the teachers, letting them know there's a 504. But then there needs, as you hit that middle school time, and moving into high school, that's when you start to push your child to say, well, you need to let your teacher know, remind your teacher.
Right.
It's so important. And I think if you explain to them the benefits and help them see how the accommodations are benefiting them, they're, again, going to be more likely to push. So really quick, so workplace accommodations fall under ADA as well, the Americans mm-hmm. with Disabilities Act. And so when we talk, I feel like lately we've had a lot of workplace accommodation conversations and clients that have needed those. Mm-hmm. So those are harder to come up with.
They
it's very hard to accommodate a workplace or work environment. And really right now, everyone's working from home.
Right.
But thinking back to pre-COVID and what it's like, and hopefully what it'll be like again soon, what would be some workplace environments that you would, or workplace environment accommodations that you would recommend?
You know, one of the first ones that comes to mind is being able to use the text to, or speech to text software. So if you struggle with reading and writing, and your job requires a lot of writing, there are these different accommodation. There are different apps, softwares, extensions for Google, applications that you can speak into your computer and it'll type it for you. And vice versa. You can also have it read to you. And so struggling getting through emails, if you are having to decipher a lot of different emails throughout your day at work, if that's part of your job, typing up reports, typing up written
communication.
So those are some different accommodations that will be beneficial. Those text-to-speech software, drag and dictation. Also getting extra time. If you do process information a little bit more slowly and you struggle to read and you have to take more time to read and reread and reread over and over again in order to comprehend what you're reading, you're going to also benefit from getting extra time on your whatever your assigned tasks are at work. So that's a very important accommodation for employers to consider. Also something for people with physical disabilities, being able to have full access to the building with wheelchair ramps and wide hallways and accessible bathrooms.
And I think it's interesting. Most people would easily come up with those kinds of things, right? Because we see them all the time and we know we have, but you don't think about voice to text. And, you know, or being able to audio record a meeting.
Right.
You know, or, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Being able to audio. Or getting a preview of what's coming. Like, if there's a big project coming that you get maybe a little bit advance notice of what it is, that you have a little bit more time to process it. Mm-hmm. Not being called on in meetings because you need a few minutes to, you know, you don't think on your feet like that for whatever reason.
Right.
Noise-canceling headphones.
Oh, yeah, that's
you know, to keep out the distractions. But we all know about, you know, ramps and handicapped bathroom stalls and rails and all of that has become, thankfully, so commonplace that we forget about these other things because the accommodations that we need for the stuff that's going on inside,
right,
the physical outside, are equally as important. Yeah. So, yeah, I do feel like we've had a lot more of those recently. And again, anytime there's a shift, like with people working more from home and needing to accommodate, set up things a little bit differently, or if they've just graduated college and now they're working in an environment where they're in a cubicle and there's lots of distractions, or it's always a good time to start thinking about, you know, I don't think they realize that they can actually get those kinds of supports.
Even frequent breaks, you know, people that have long extended work hours that have a hard time sustaining their focus and attention for extended periods of time, they're going to benefit from being able to get frequent breaks and be able to get up and move around and walk away from assignments and not be looked at like, what are you doing? Are you slacking off by, you know, walking away from your desk or taking a lap around the building and, right, and things like that? So that's another good accommodation for the workplace is the frequent breaks. So you're right that there are some things that are not as easily spottable to the eye that we don't think about, and that there are plenty of adults out there that need those accommodations in the workforce. And many of them don't know they're even entitled to those.
Well, and a lot of them are so hesitant to want to share that they do have any kind of disability, especially when it is something cognitive related, like an attention deficit or a dyslexia, right, because they feel like that's going to hinder how they're viewed or change how they're viewed or the expectations or limit their ability to grow in the company.
That's
so
true.
They need to understand that that would then be discrimination.
Right.
And that they couldn't do that and that it's okay to ask for these things. And it, just like with everything else, if you ask for it and you show that it's benefiting you, then no one's going to have a problem with it.
That's right.
Right? As long as it's helping you do a better job. So.
And at the end of the day, they just want to see you performing your job to the best of your ability.
Absolutely. So, well, I think this has been really helpful. I think we've given a lot of good information.
I think so, too.
So our next episode is going to be all about special education. And I feel like that's going to be really good information to have because so many people just struggle to understand the difference between 504 and special education. If you have specific questions about 504 or really any of the topics we've discussed or anything learning disability related, please do not hesitate to email us. letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. And you can always visit our website. Everything's going to be, all the information is going to be in the show notes. But do not hesitate to reach out. Abby, thanks. I'm glad we're back.
Oh, me too. Thanks
and,
for being here with
hope
me.
Hope you guys can join us next time when we can talk a little bit more about learning disabilities. Have a great day.
Yeah, take care. Stay warm.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.